This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
What up, y'all? It's your boy Danny Green, three-time NBA champ. You either rooted for me or rooted against me. Join myself and my co-host Harrison Sanford on the Inside the Green Room podcast.
It's a podcast that brings you never-before-told tales from the locker room to candid interviews with basketball legends to breakdowns of what's happening in the NBA right now. Whether you're a diehard fan or casual about your hoops, this podcast brings you the game like never before.
Follow Inside the Green Room on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's time to take a trip around the college football universe with Isaac and Sue.
I would like to know things.
This is the College Football Jamboree, part of Primetime with Isaac and Sue on 1080.
He is a five-star douche-magoo.
What?
The Fan.
All right, they're kicking down the new college football playoff rankings as we speak. Oregon, 16th. Oregon State, 15th.
Hey, go Beavs.
Washington, 12. Utah, 11. And they're only up to number 8, so we'll have to see where USC falls, but most likely 4.
Yeah. Huskies, by the way, still a chance with the Rose Bowl. If you're a UW fan, you're a big USC fan. Because if USC wins, they're in the college football playoffs, no doubt. And we would assume at that point that UW then would get selected by the Rose Bowl to more than likely play Ohio State.
What a great matchup.
Yeah, and then if Ohio State somehow got in, let's say TCU lost, and they bumped them, then it would be Penn State and UW. Either way, you probably got a pretty good Rose Bowl there, and then, of course, if USC lost, it would be USC in the Rose Bowl. At this point, basically, you're down to six teams that have any sort of real shot. I guess seven, you could say, because the Alabama-Tennessee debate, obviously, if chalk holds, well, I mean, Michigan and Georgia in no matter what. And then if TCU and USC win, there you go. There's your four. But you still, if one or both of those teams lose, TCU or USC, then you get into where you want to go with Ohio State, Alabama, Tennessee. And it will be interesting to see where this ranking goes, because with Tennessee and Alabama not having, and Ohio State not having any more games to play, their resumes are complete. So how they have them lined up here, in theory, should lead you down the road of if USC or TCU is upset, that should be the ranking of where they slide in. So this actually will mean a lot here, who gets ranked 5, 6, and 7.
Yeah, we haven't seen yet. Well, actually, we do know 7th is Tennessee.
Okay, so there's...
Alabama is 6.
Yeah.
So that means Ohio State is 5.
So,
but I hate that USC or TCU could be punished for getting an extra game.
Yep.
You know, that's bull.
Yep.
They earn an extra game, and then they lose, and then the team that didn't earn the extra game gets to advance past them just by sitting at home. I think that's so stupid.
Yep. And especially with TCU, because TCU hasn't lost all year. So if they lose one game, because Michigan and Georgia, it doesn't matter. They lose a game, who cares? You're a one-loss team, you're in. You'll get bumped down. But it does feel like with TCU, if TCU loses to Kansas State, I feel like they are going to get left out. And that sucks, because they would still be a one-loss team, and I think they're going to get bumped. And now if you're Ohio State, you're just sitting pretty right now in the catbird seat, saying all you need is... And by the way, neither one of those things is ridiculous, to think that Kansas State or Utah could upset the favorite in those games. In fact, I think the TCU game is only like a 2.5-point spread. I haven't seen the USC one.
Three. Yeah.
So, I mean, neither one of those would be massive upsets. And if you're Ohio State, you're just sitting around at this point kind of licking your chops, and then Bama needs chaos. Bama needs two of those teams to lose.
USC is number 4, TCU 3, and then I would imagine Michigan maybe jumped Georgia with the Ohio State win?
Well, they were,
I doubt it.
They were saying that, like, from a computer standpoint, that Michigan has a better resume, but...
Really?
You know, we'll see.
Yeah.
I mean, Georgia's been number 1, you know, for... basically the entire year.
Yeah, they're getting ready to reveal 1 and 2. The Jambrew Coaching Carousel Edition goes first to Nebraska, where Matt Rhule was hired. Yeah, Michigan is still 2.
Yeah.
So Georgia 1. So it goes like this. Georgia 1, Michigan 2, TCU 3, USC 4, Ohio State 5, Alabama 6, and Tennessee's still in the mix. They're 7 because they're going to have a case because everybody, you know, like if Alabama gets in, Tennessee's going to be like, well, wait a minute.
But this
we
is,
beat them.
But this is, and this is why I wanted to see where this goes. With their resumes complete now,
you don't know how they jump them.
I don't know how you would jump them because neither one has anything.
Well, I'm just saying they have a case. They should be ahead of them.
If you get TCU and USC that lose and you bump in Ohio State and Alabama, absolutely Tennessee can scream from the rafters. Hey, we beat them. Yeah, we have a bad loss on our schedule, but we beat the team ahead of us. And, of course, Alabama's thing is we lost to 2 top 10 teams on the road on the last play of the game. But I just don't understand the head-to-head thing, why that wouldn't carry more weight. But you may not get there because, again, you're going to need both TCU and USC to lose to even have that be a factor.
So Matt Rhule is the new coach at Nebraska. We thought that, according to Dennis Dodd, he had turned that job down, but turns out he took it, and if that guy can't turn around Nebraska, who can? He's a program. That's what he does.
That's what he does.
Is turn around program.
If Matt Rhule fails at Nebraska, then I think it's safe to say that that's a bad job.
Right.
It's just, yeah. You have a lot of resources, and you know it's a great fan base, but at some point, it's just not a good job anymore if you keep having failure after failure after failure. Even though I'd make the argument that Bo Pelini wasn't a failure there. Bo Pelini was just victim of unfair expectations.
So he was at Rhule. His first head coaching job was at Temple. 2-10, 6-6, 10-4, 10-3. Pretty good.
Yeah.
Temple. Then he goes to Baylor right after Art Briles. 1-11. 7-6, 11-3.
I mean,
come on, man. And now to Nebraska. And then, of course, he went to the NFL and failed miserably.
And he's a player development guy. Look, there's no way you can say this is a bad hire. And by all accounts, a really good guy, great in the community. Whether or not it works out there, I don't know. But you can't criticize this hire. In fact, I would make the argument you couldn't, for what's out there.
That's the best hire anybody's made.
It's the best hire.
So far.
Yes.
I mean, not everybody's made their hires,
yeah.
But
you just,
he's the safest.
Yes.
I read that he beat an AP-ranked team at Temple more recently than Nebraska beat an AP-ranked team. Can you believe that?
That's phenomenal.
That's true.
Whoops.
So Colorado has reportedly offered Deion Sanders, who's at
Jackson State.
And he said, yeah.
Done a really good job.
Colorado offered me. I can't think of a worse fit. Not one thing fits about that.
No.
I kind of see where Colorado's coming from in a sense that it's like, you know, we got to do something different here.
Yep.
But that ain't it, man.
No. It's.
And what's it say about Colorado if he stays at Jackson State?
I don't necessarily think that that's a huge indictment on Colorado. I just, like you said, it's a bad fit. And Deion Sanders and his name and his cachet and what he can bring to the table, the success he's had at Jackson State, what he means in recruiting, what he means in getting into African-American living rooms. He's got too much juice right now to settle for a program that, outside of the 1 year, right? McIntyre got him to the Pac-12 title game once. Outside of that, Colorado hasn't been relevant in 20 years. No. That needs to be a job that's either a stepping stone job or a job for like a young coordinator. Again, McIntyre, who did a nice job building up San Jose State, and that's a nice progression. A guy like DeBoer that from Fresno State, and he ended up going to UW. That's the sort of guy that's going to end up taking that Colorado job. Not a guy that feels like his star is just too bright for Colorado.
Somebody texted and said, "What about?" Prime to UNLV. What a great... Now, there's a fit, right?
Except it's arguably one of the least successful programs in college football.
Well, but that fits in a sense that, they got to do something different. And Prime's not going to get a major Power 5 job yet. Like, he's too much of a wild card. Although the report is that perhaps... Because he said Deion said he has multiple offers. Some think maybe Georgia Tech offered him. Down there, he's, you know, they're down that way.
Boy, that's a, again, that's like going to Stanford. That's a, you want to talk about having one high, one hand tied behind your back.
But
Georgia Tech,
the UNLV thing, you know, if you want to think outside the box at UNLV, I don't know if you could get him, but he is only at Jackson State.
Yeah,
that's an interesting hire. UNLV, if you didn't know, fired Marcus Arroyo.
Yeah, and by the way, he'd be at UNLV for 2 years, and if he was successful, he'd be gone anyways. But yeah, well, the idea of doing something different.
I am convinced that anywhere he goes will be on probation within 4 years, and he will be out of there within five.
It's a lot harder to get on probation now, though, because you can pay kids now.
No, that's true.
You know.
All right, let's look at the Stanford job. The Athletic did a pretty interesting article, a pretty fair look at what that job is now as David Shaw has stepped down. And they brought up a very interesting name that could be in play for Stanford. We will get to that next on the Jamboree. It's 418 on the Fan.
All right, football fans, the NFL draft is almost here, and the free Odyssey app brings you the latest coverage from the biggest sports radio stations across the country. Which players will help your team the most? Who will make a draft day trade? Will they be ready for week one? The local conversations about the team you love. All streaming free right here on the Odyssey app. AUDACY. Download it today.
All right, we're ruining. In the News is up next. There are six Pac-12 schools in the top 17 of the latest college football rankings.
Been by far the best year I can remember for the Pac-12, and if USC gets in, then, I mean, geez, you can make the argument that it's the best we've had in this era of the playoff.
So David Shaw stepped down at Stanford, and, you know, he knows.
Yeah.
It's the NIL thing. It's like
transfer portals.
Exactly. There's a piece in The Athletic that I thought was a pretty fair look at the Stanford job. It's by Chris Vanini.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll just read you a little portion of it because he goes through a lot of different things of, you know, what's going on at Stanford.
I'm interested in this because I've said in the new era of college football, I think this is one of the worst jobs in college football.
Well, Shaw ends his tenure as the winningest coach ever there.
Did an amazing job.
96 and 54.
Couple Rose Bowls.
Three Pac-12 titles.
Doorstep of a national, playing for in the college football playoff a couple times. Should have won at least one Heisman Trophy.
So, one thing I want to point out is that he does say, and I think it's fair to say, that Stanford will pay.
Yeah.
I mean, Shaw's salary was believed to be almost $7 million a year.
Yeah, and it's private, so we don't know, but Shaw got paid.
So, that is good.
Yeah.
So, here's what he writes about Stanford's place in college football. He says, Stanford and other high academic schools have long had the disadvantage of their admission standards. Shaw said many times that recruits don't know until December if they can even get into Stanford.
Yep.
With the early signing period and now transfer windows, that crunch has become even more prevalent. A decade ago, Shaw spoke out against the early signing period, but it came to be and Stanford had to adjust. The new transfer rules and upcoming windows have made it even tougher for Stanford. It's easy to lose players and hard to add them at a place like Stanford. They are also not very active in the name, image, and likeness world. The fan passion just isn't there, as evidenced by the small crowds year after year. It's harder to raise small-dollar NIL donations with people who don't want to play that game. Stanford has more than enough rich donors to step up if they need to. Even Shaw's job title has an endowment, but it's harder to make it work for NIL, especially when the pool of potential players is so small. After the BYU loss, Shaw said there had been some discussions with the administration about being more open in that world, but I think it tells you all you need to know that he stepped down.
Yep. I mean, it was only a number of years ago, and I think it was Shaw and Harbaugh that kind of started this. They had to buy houses on campus because assistant coaches couldn't afford to live there. Like, and I know assistant...
Well, that's just smart business. I mean, the Bay is different.
Exactly. But, I mean, there's so many challenges that go along with being in Stanford. So, not only do you have all the challenges that go along with what you talked about getting players, I think it's really hard to keep coaches there. Like, it is not a cheap place to be. And when you look at all the things that were mentioned in there, and when you said it's hard to get players, you're not getting transfer players. You're just not. You are losing players every year. You're not bringing any into the transfer portal. And whether it's Alabama, whether it's Ohio State, whether it's Oregon, whether it's USC, do we not think that the transfer portal is kind of a big deal that you have? You're just not going to be able to compete, and you can't buy recruits anymore. Well, you can't buy them to the level that other big-name schools are doing, because you mentioned the collective just isn't there, the passion isn't there. So when you ask me, of all the jobs that are in the Pac-12 right now, I really do think, outside of you're willing to pay your head coach, I think you can make a strong case that the worst job in the Pac-12, and I don't think it's close, is Stanford. So,
I don't know.
What does Stanford have? Let's say, like let's take Arizona would probably be the other one in Colorado, right? That would be the bad jobs right now. What does Stanford have that Arizona or Colorado doesn't, other than you have a little tradition, which doesn't mean a whole lot, because
prestige.
Because of most of the kids that you're going after, that you would want to go after, can't even get in there. Oh, and by the way, even the graduates you're not able to do. Some of their own players, when they graduate, remember that was a couple years ago that David Shaw had to deal with this, where players that graduated, you know, they would come back for another year because they would graduate early. They couldn't get into Stanford graduate school, so they had to transfer someplace else. You're not playing with one hand tied behind your back. You're Dan Campbell in this thing. You've got one ass cheek and three toes at Stanford. So with the exception of they're willing to pay, I don't know what Stanford has other than, like you said, a little cachet to the name and the brand.
They have some prestige. They do have deep pockets. So I just wonder if the right fit, the right coach, could maybe unlock a few of those doors, you know?
I remember when we had Andrew Luck on, who at the time was the biggest name in college football. And we asked Andrew Luck, we're like, hey, is it hard to walk around campus? He's like, no.
No, no one knows who
it's
I
like,
am.
It's like, no one knows. That's Andrew Luck.
There's a lot of apathy there, but like this article said, there are a lot of rich donors. There's a lot of money that comes out of there. There's a lot of high-profile people that you just got to engage them, and I don't know. I think they've got potential. I don't know. It's hard to argue with you that it's the worst job, but then you look at jobs like Colorado, or, you know, you just go, come on. Like, they have nothing. To me, it's a nice setting there, but...
But to me,
so I can't. I can't argue with you.
Yeah, just to me, if I'm a coach, and you're going to say, okay, I'm going to give you this blank slate to try to rebuild this program, because again, Stanford's not good right now. You're building it from the bottom. It's at a low point. I just don't know why I would pick to try to build at Stanford as opposed to building at Colorado, because the apathy and the all the things and the lack of money rolling in and the lack of NIL and lack of support and lack of fan base, all those things exist at all these schools. But none of the shackles exist at Colorado, Arizona State, or a school like Washington State than they do at Stanford.
Cal's much like Stanford. Why has Stanford had so much more success? You know, there's something with Stanford that makes it
better
than Cal.
If you are that rare kid that wants to go out and get a world-class education and is an athlete,
Stanford
is the place to go. It's the Duke of of basketball.
So you said, what do they have? It's that. It's for those elite kids that do qualify academically. Stanford is going to be high on your list. So you can get. I mean,
I would make the argument in today's world, and this is why I said I think this shift has changed. I think Stanford, I always thought that what David Shaw did at Stanford was like what Bill Snyder did at Kansas State. It's unbelievable. But I think that the landscape has shifted, and I think already a very, very hard job at Stanford became, along with Georgia Tech, the hardest job.
Well, that's pretty obvious. But Stanford, according to this article, they are fourth in the Pac-12 in team talent rankings. They are ahead of UCLA, and they're ahead of Utah. This year, there were 21 former four-star recruits on that roster. So, I mean, they have players. What went wrong? He talks about a strength and conditioning coach who left. He talks about the COVID era. Hard to say. You know, maybe Shaw checked out. I mean, who knows? But they have talent, and they can pay. So I don't know that it's the worst job in the Pac-12, but it's very hard to argue with you. One quick note before we go. The name, so he lists a bunch of names in here. And some of them are guys you've never heard of. Others are guys like Bronco Mendenhall. You remember him. He coached at BYU and Virginia.
Virginia, and then he stepped aside. He's a good coach.
Tom Herman, the former Texas head coach, which I think would be a terrible fit. The one guy that, and I've seen him mentioned a couple of places, doubt they can get him, but you got to call Chris Peterson, don't you?
Absolutely.
Great fit.
100%.
At Stanford, because Chris Peterson is the type of guy who is still that sort of student-athlete, I want to mold you type of coach.
You definitely have to get someone that wants to embrace that.
Yeah, and he would be that. He would be a unique guy that would
It's like
that.
When Cal went and got Sonny Dykes, because Cal's similar. And by the way, Stanford, I may abridge this. Cal may be a worse job than Stanford because you have a lot of the same struggles, but you don't have the cachet. And if you are going after that same kid, Stanford's a better, you know, Stanford is a bigger draw than Cal. But like when you got Sonny Dykes into Cal, that doesn't fit.
It was never a culture fit.
It was never ever a culture fit. You have to get someone in there that wants to embrace the challenges and really hold up the honor. Yeah.
Well, you remember like with Peterson, like that was his whole thing, right? It was these OKG our kind of guys. I mean, he wanted guys that were specifically that way.
Yeah, I feel like he would be a fit there. The only question is, does he even want to coach?
Yeah. And I just think now, I wonder, in those recruiting battles that Stanford had, where you're going after that kid that wants a world-class education, and he's a 4- or 5-star kid, the Andrew Luck of the world, and you found a way to win that battle, and you had to win very specific ones because you didn't have a big pool to pick from. I just think about the world now where you have to go get that kid, and then you have to go convince him not to go to Washington for $4 million.
Yeah.
And then if he doesn't play right away at Stanford, or they have or he does have a good year, you have to convince him to not go to Oregon the next year for $4 million and transfer. He can bail at any moment, or when he gets on Stanford and finds out that it really sucks having to do those classes. It's just, man, I feel for that program in today's world.
There's your Rue. Let's get to in the news. The Lord took a giant white dump on Mount Hood.
Oh.
We'll get to that next. Here's Buck.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
I saw this dude. Oh, man. You deadheads are going to kill me. Who's the living main Grateful Dead guy? Bob Weir? Yeah, Bob Weir. I saw him on Jane Pauley's excellent Sunday morning CBS program.
Is there an old, I always thought that program couldn't get any older until you got Jane Pauley interviewing the remaining Grateful Dead guy.
Well, I don't think she did that story. She has reporters. You know, she's just the host.
It's like the Bryant Gumbel, and then they send it out.
Well, Bob Weir is now playing with orchestras. I don't know if you knew that.
I did not know that.
Pretty awesome. It was a pretty cool story. Like, there's a, what do you call the orchestra leader guy?
The conductor.
The conductor.
The maestro, if you will.
Yeah, the conductor guy is going through the music and fitting the orchestra with his music, and he actually said that a lot of the Grateful Dead music works perfectly if you really dig into it with an orchestra. So he's going. Bob Weir is playing. I don't know if he's touring right now.
Grateful Dead music.
Yeah,
but
with an orchestra. Huh. It sounds awesome.
One of my, my favorite concert that I've ever been to in my life was, I was very fortunate enough to go see both nights of the S&M 2, the Metallica with the San Francisco Philharmonic, and it was amazing. And again, like when done right, music can blend with anything.
Well, I love a good orchestra.
Yes,
and he is touring. Right, it looks like he's not going to be out in December, but after the first of the year, he has a bunch of shows with orchestras all around the country.
Yeah, if you ever get a chance to go see, if you like the Grateful Dead, you will love them with the orchestra, because I just think there's something, like you said, about an orchestra that adds to any kind of music. Love that stuff.
And then the Dead and Company are,
yeah, that's
the final tour.
Well, and that's with John Mayer, right? Isn't he leading that?
Mayer's in that, but that's in May. I thought they already went on their final tour, but then in May they're starting to go.
Let me just say this: there is no such thing as a final tour.
So he's playing, sorry, he's only playing in Atlanta with the orchestra at the symphony.
Mm.
Okay.
But
then the Dead and Company final tour starts in May.
I watched Motley Crue do two farewell concerts like a year and a half apart from one another.
Yeah.
And then they said that there were no more because Mick Mars can't stand anymore. Guess who's touring again? Motley Crue.
They lied to us.
The Rolling Stones have had at least 17 farewell tours.
I feel like Elton John has had that too.
Yes. And all you need to know is this. Lynyrd Skynyrd is still touring.
Yeah, but they didn't say farewell tour, did they?
They're all dead! And yet there's still, like, there's like one guy. He was like their keyboard player or something. And yet they still are out there being like, it's Lynyrd Skynyrd.
All right, it's November 29, 2022. Time now for the news. I'm your noted newsman, Carbon Neutral. Thank you. Hello. It is National Square Dance Day. Have you ever square danced?
Yeah, I can't believe they didn't do this in Kansas. But here in the Pacific Northwest, when you were in like the fifth grade, you had to square dance.
Yeah, we had it in class.
You know, heaven forbid you taught us, I don't know, about like mortgages or interest rates or the stock market. No, we were busy square dancing.
It is also Throw Out Your Leftovers Day.
No.
Have you thrown out all your...
I had some delicious salad roll, like Thai lettuce wraps. For lunch today, there were leftovers. Sometimes leftovers are even better than the original. I'm not throwing those out.
Big snow. Ocean snow. Big snow.
Can it snow in the ocean?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Anything?
Yeah. Just like
I mean, it doesn't accumulate, but yeah. It's the water.
Deadliest catch. It snows on those guys all the time.
Yeah.
They're out there crabbing.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. That snow, I always feel like that's more like a sleet sort of thing.
Well, like Isaac said, I mean, it can't like build up on the water, but it can definitely snow out there.
The Lord took a giant white dump on Mount Hood the last few days. So two lifts opened at Timberline yesterday, and Mount Hood Meadows opens today in limited capacity. Now they're saying Hood River and Cascades will get another major snow tonight. It's a winter storm warning for the gorge from Corbett to Hood River from 4 o'clock from now until 10 a.m. tomorrow.
I wish I was a winter sports enthusiast. I do. It seems like a lot of fun.
It is fun, but it's a lot of work, too.
Yeah, again, right? Seems like a pain in the ass. And at this point, my knees, it's too late to start. Seems like I'm going to be very sore after the fact.
Here's something you could do. Would you like to drive a snowplow?
No, I wouldn't. That sounds terrible.
Oregon is facing a snowplow driver shortage heading into this winter. So they desperately need you. They have over 40 vacancies.
So like anything else, they can't find anyone to work. I'm guessing there has to be some sort of qualification for this. I don't think I can just rock up to the ODOT building and be like, give me a snowplow.
You know, I don't know. They could probably train you.
I'm guessing there you have to have one of those. So a CDL, one of the big truck driving licenses.
You can get that, can you?
Figure that out. Probably get paid pretty well, I'm guessing.
It's a chronic shortage, they said.
I didn't know we had 40 snowplows. I just thought we had like four.
Yeah, no, we've built that up.
We built it up.
But I still think we share with Seattle.
Okay.
I think.
We have a lot of snow plows, but, you know, nothing ever seems to be plowed, and we need it like three times a year.
ODOT has 132 vacancies across the state for maintenance positions, including snow plow drivers, salt truck drivers, and de-icers. 40 of those vacancies are in eastern Oregon, where there's a greater need. Mm-hmm. So if you'd like a job, there is one that you could have.
Let me say for
potential.
I would not want that job because I don't know about you, driving in bad conditions is one of my least favorite activities on the planet. I absolutely hate the stress.
It is stressful.
If you're driving to Bend and you're going through, you're going over the mountain, right? And it starts to snow on your way down. That is one of the worst feelings in the world when you just all of a sudden the road, you can't see the lines and the wind starts picking up and it's just an awful, awful feeling. And
you know what it is?
I don't want anything to do with that.
It's sneaky hard.
Yes.
Because you really do have to focus.
Yeah, the entire time.
And it's one of those things where you're in it and you're just driving, but you're focused and you're getting it done. And then when you're done with it, you're exhausted.
It's like it's such a relief. Because normally driving is such a mindless activity. And when you're in bad conditions, like you said, it takes every ounce of your focus.
When we come back on In the News, look, I don't want to minimize a death. I don't. But I'm about to.
Oh, well, that's kind of what we do.
Here's, oh wait, it's not Buck. It's 446 on the Fan. Do you remember that big snowstorm, the big one that caused it to look like end of days here in Portland, where you guys were all stuck in the commute for like 8 hours?
I do remember that.
You remember that? I wasn't on the show that day.
No, you weren't. Me and my brother were, and we had to hold up at, I think we went to the Buffalo Gap, and we just waited to see if anything would clear up, and then eventually, like maybe about 9:30 or 10, we just drove home in the middle of the freeway, and there was no one out there.
Yeah. I've told the story many times, but to your white-knuckling, driving through crappy conditions commentary, I had to drive from Joseph, Oregon, way out in eastern Oregon, to Portland with my aunt and her dog through that entire storm. Because that storm was moving west to east. It moved all the way throughout the state. We drove through the whole thing.
How long did that take you?
I mean, I think I got into town at 2 a.m. I don't remember what time we left. I want to say 4 or 5 p.m.
And my guess is that you're going 20, 25 miles an hour.
Very slow. Yeah. And at one point stopped because something happened up ahead and they closed the freeway. And I remember I told the story of the cop yelling at me, but that happens all the time. I was exhausted. And I got into Portland at 2 a.m.
Yeah.
And there were cars strewn about. Like, it looked like end of days here.
Yeah.
It was unbelievable.
Yep.
I didn't even know what you guys went through. I was driving through that whole damn thing, and it was crazy.
Yeah, I remember me and my brother driving home, and all along the freeway, cars were just abandoned.
Jesus.
And we were like, what? Like, oh my gosh. And we just, and we there was a line of cars with us, and we just were all in, because you couldn't see any of the lines, so we just drove in the middle of the freeway, and we're like, we're just going to call this good and inch our way home.
Do you remember Shutdown Brown?
Oh, I remember Shutdown Brown.
Still our governor, Kate.
When does that change over? Is that a January 1 next, thing?
Yeah, right?
Well, I don't know, because like, I know
January that, at some point.
Well, I know with the like the president, it's not January 1st, so I didn't know if there was like a, I'm assuming there's some sort of date officially. You know, the whole January 6th thing.
I don't know. I'm just going to guess January. Okay, so Kate Brown, still in office, she has ordered all flags at Oregon public institutions to be flown at half staff. Care to guess why?
Trying to think of what happened that we would half staff at. I don't know.
The order comes in honor and remembrance of United States Representative Donald McEachin from Virginia.
Okay.
Can't basically, say. It's like one of her friends. And like I said, I don't want to minimize death here, but really?
I've never heard of it.
Well, who's heard of them?
Well, she has.
She's a friend. I'm sure they're friends.
Is that kind of one of the...
Is that the perk of being a governor?
Well, I guess. Like, I was watching Yellowstone, and it sounds like if you're the governor, you can do whatever the hell you want,
hey,
right?
Hey, my dog died.
Let's
take the flags down,
well,
okay?
Let me just say this. It's one thing to be the governor and have this sort of power, but when you're, like, a short-timer and she's only got a couple weeks left, right? Isn't that like you just do whatever the hell you want?
Maybe.
I'd start making up stuff to fly them at half-staff.
Well,
why not?
Like, I feel like at this point, flags could just be perennially flown at half-staff.
Yeah. You know?
Preemptively?
Yeah. I guess.
People are always getting shot.
Something's going to happen.
Yeah, it's like, well, yeah. Like, don't they say there's a mass shooting like every other day or something?
Oh, yeah. We have quite a few of those.
So I thought maybe it was for the Colorado Springs or Virginia. But yeah, no, but, it's some friend of hers from Congress. Some old-ass white guy.
So let's minimize his death.
Yeah, I think we should.
I'm sure he was a wonderful human being and a humanitarian and we'll miss
you. She says
he
was. I don't even know who he is. This is an easy one. Give a coat and feel good about yourself. It's cold out there, as you know.
It is very cold.
The Portland nonprofits that serve homeless people are desperate for winter coat donations this year. So if you have winter coats lying around that you'd like to donate, that's an easy thing to do. Blanchette House, Rose Haven, and the Union Gospel Mission all have a hefty need for coats because donations have really slowed.
I don't have a winter coat.
Oh, don't you?
No, I don't own one. Should I? Like, I don't...
Well, I mean, it's cold. It's up to you. I don't care what you wear.
I don't, like... I'm assuming a winter coat, like you're talking about, like, some sort of very warm parka-esque thing.
Right.
No, I don't
have one from baseballism, and it is delightful. Yeah, I'll tell you something. It's the warmest coat I've ever worn.
Don't own one. If I had to go out and be in very cold weather for a significant period of time,
you'd be screwed, huh?
Yeah, I don't really know what I would
layer up.
What I'd go? Yeah, I'd layer up. Because I have some windbreakers that are kind of waterproof, and I think I would just I'd have to throw some layers on and then throw that sucker on top of them. But I'm winter coatless. I don't wear a lot of coats. So if it's really nasty out, I'm usually not outside.
Hey, am I on time? When are you going to tell me to break?
I wasn't going to because you're right on time, brother.
Wow. Well, I can give you another story if you want.
Well, then you'd be late.
I feel like Suk's not even listening, so I'll just break.
Oh, I'm listening. I'm just trying to figure out, are we going to keep going? I don't. When's the last time we broke at 55?
Feels unusual.
I know.
But I'm going to do it. Let's see.
Kind of was hoping for one more story.
So people tuning in at 5:10 for the Hot 5 at 5 are going to be pissed.
You're screwed.
They're going to miss all Hot 5.
They're going to be late.
Sorry.
The Hot 5 at 5 is next. We'll see if we can kill some time ahead of it. That's your In the News, November 29. 2022. It is 4:56 on The Fan.
What up, y'all? It's your boy Danny Green, 3-time NBA champ. You either rooted for me or rooted against me. Join myself and my co-host Harrison Sanford on the Inside the Green Room podcast.
It's a podcast that brings you never-before-told tales from the locker room to candid interviews with basketball legends to breakdowns of what's happening in the NBA right now. Whether you're a diehard fan or casual about your hoops, this podcast brings you the game like never before.
Follow Inside the Green Room on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.